I'm Brian McCreath. I'm at Symphony Hall with Martin Helmschen, who is here with the Boston Symphony to perform the Emperor Concerto by Beethoven. Mr. Helmschen, thank you for your time today.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
You have a long relationship with Christoph von Dohnányi, and I'm interested in how that relationship began. How long have you worked with him?
I think the first time we've worked together must have been about 5 years ago in Paris. With another very good friend of mine who brought us together, with Didier de Cotigny, who is the manager of Orchestre de Paris. And he's a great matchmaker for young soloists and conductors and for chamber music and everything as well. So he thought we should get to know each other. And that was a very important week in my life, because it was the Dvořák piano concerto, which I love to play very much and which I got to know in a recording that Maestro von Dohnányi was conducting with András Schiff. So that was already a very emotional thing, the collaboration. And since then, he has become the most important supporting figure for me that I've probably had ever.
Well, I mean, and someone of Maestro Dohnányi's stature would be important to anybody who he's supporting. But tell me more about why he in particular. I imagine many conductors are very attracted to your playing, but why has he been such an important supporter?
Yeah, but before I had met him, I had people I've collaborated regularly with, of course, and great friends. But he has been the most important one for me to open doors that would have maybe not opened, at least as quickly, and especially for all these big debuts in the U.S. With these phenomenal orchestras and in great places. So I really owe him a lot. And also on the personal level, I feel that there is there's something very special in it with somebody who is approaching 90 years by now and still such a young person at heart and in such incredible shape, but has seen most of the last century. And this is it's such a rare thing to be close with somebody that you have so much admiration and respect for, and who has so much greater view of the world and art and humanity and everything, and is at the same time so supportive in such an easy way and fun to work with and spontaneous on stage. And then also this old Bonhoeffer connection is particularly important for me, because Dietrich Bonhoeffer is one of my greatest heroes and one of my most admired persons in German history, I'd have to say. So being so close to somebody who sat on his lap and who is a direct nephew and godson also is in a way a little bit unreal for me, but very impressive. And we've been talking a lot about many things that I could talk only with him. Yeah,
absolutely. And you know, I don't know if you were aware of this, that the Saturday night performance, there was a gift given to the BSO in support of the performance in memory of Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it was nice to mention it to Mr. Dohnányi yesterday as well. And I agree that he has this history in his own family and in German culture that's just amazing. So I can understand why his influence would be so important.
And of course, the musical branch of the family just as much, the Dohnányi branch. So it's a completely unique family, I think, not only in Germany.
Yeah. Well, and you you grew up in West Berlin, but then you studied in East Berlin after the wall came down. And I wonder what that was like, whether there were things that you were surprised at because that was such a strong divide. What did you find when you began interacting more with those who had been in the East?
Yeah. In my case, I always had lots of ties to the East, because actually the bigger part of my family was in the East, even at separation times. So we had been going back and forth regularly, which we could, living in the West, which the Easterners, of course, could not. But we had that freedom to visit our relatives as often as we can. And both the siblings of my father and more direct relatives of my father's side and my grandmother's side in different places, but they were both living in either Brandenburg or Saxony, so the former GDR states. So I had been in touch, but still it was extremely exciting after the wall came down, because that school that I went to was a very socialist concept. It was one of the things that that survived after the wall came down, modeled after these Russian special schools for music and sports, where as a school kid, you are already something like a student, and you have the musical subjects together with the general subjects in the same house and in the same time schedule. So no separation between mathematics, chemistry, English, and music theory, orchestra playing, sight reading, all these things. So that was the type of school that we didn't have in the West, and extremely precious for me. So I owe a lot, or most of my early musical education, to this very school. And then, as so much of the cultural heritage of Germany lies in the eastern states, like Saxony, I would have missed a lot if the separation had gone on, and I would not have had these opportunities to perform and study naturally in these places like Dresden and Leipzig and Weimar, where it's a kind of core region of German culture, and not only in music, but also in all kinds of other fields of art.
Well, so the kind of education that you had, it sounds like music was just interwoven with everything else. Mm-hmm. And yet now when you look around and you see education systems, I mean, it's sort of a common discussion in this country that music is sort of left to the side. Yeah. And I wonder what, I mean, I would think, of course, maybe it's obvious that you would want music to be a valued part of an education, but tell me more about the value of it. What is it that music does for a young mind in that setting?
Yeah. For me, the most striking thing always is that, I think holistic is the right word, thing that intellectual education and emotional education, finding ways to express yourself as an individual and find your voice, your stylistic approach to things. And then in chamber music, to learn how to interact with others with the skills that each of you have, is to me such a fundamental human thing that I can't even really think about the question whether it is important or not, because it is so natural. And I like this concept from antique times so much that when science started to grow in old Greek times, there was no separation between the science and the arts. Yeah, this is a kind of modern concept that these are supposed to be different fields. People were much less... education, I think, was much less specific. Education meant that you know a lot in every field, and that you that these things are not different worlds, but science and art are interwoven and just part of a human education that is important as a whole.
And yet, one of the really big ways that you have taken forward your ideas of education and development, how music helps people, is by this project in Rwanda, of all places. What is behind that?
Yeah, the idea started with my wife, who's a cellist, doing pretty much the same thing as I do, traveling the world with concerts, who had something like that in mind for a while, and a big love and fascination for Africa. And via common friends, somehow we heard about an existing music school in Kigali in Rwanda, that, which was for us the special thing, was run by local people and not by Westerners, and is teaching African traditional music and Western European classical music in the same building, the same institution. And we found that very fascinating. So my wife's wish, was to be somehow closer to the life-changing fundamental power that music can have, and not only move in the kind of high art spectrum that we normally are in as performing soloists. So that seemed a great opportunity to support something where people don't have naturally access to music education, which is pretty much given in the West, which is a great achievement. But for these kids, or also young adults, it makes a complete change in their life, whether they've never heard of Bach before or learn how to play Bach pieces. It's just much more fundamental than what we normally deal with here. And it's been an exciting way over a couple of years now to support the school and to see other initiatives in the country grow now the first little orchestra that also has many, many local people in it. And we try to go as often as we can and play concerts and raise funds and help with know-how and teach and all these things.
A couple of things fascinate me about this, because one is that Rwanda was, of course, torn apart by this awful civil war. And so your experience growing up in a divided country that came together, I wonder if there's a way in which that context helps you to understand what's going on in Rwanda.
I always feel when I'm there that this genocide that they had 20 years ago is so unlike anything else that we've had in Europe in the last 70 years, of course. So it was so outrageous that I feel strange to even compare my own experience that I have to anything that these few surviving, one will have to say, surviving people have gone through. It's a fine line sometimes whether we should ever mention things that have to do with the past or not. And I don't really feel that my own background really helps me with that very much. It's a very sensitive thing. But it is a great situation to have people who for whom music can be a very deep therapeutic element, and where, as I said, music can change a life completely, and still this political stability that they have. So this is what made this country a great place for us to work, because there's a certain sense of stability in what we can build and what we can support, and still such a deep need in people that is much more desperate, yeah, in many ways than what we experience over here.
Well, the other thing that fascinates me about this this school in Rwanda and your work with it is that African music is absolutely fundamentally different as a language. Mm-hmm. It's just built completely mm-hmm. differently. And I wonder yeah. whether your interaction with that music in some ways stimulates you in unexpected ways yeah. with the music you play, maybe here in Symphony Hall.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, the fascination for African traditional music is around a lot, not only in contemporary music like Ligeti and other composers who have been very interested in African patterns and styles of music, but of course only also the incredible influence for jazz and rock music that has shaped so much of what we listen to every day, and we don't really know about it how many of these roots lie in African music. So that is one very fascinating thing. But then, of course, the aspect that music is so universal, and these different styles that have grown in different ways on different continents still appeal to other people in different ways, so that even people who have never heard a Beethoven piece before, of course, they don't understand many of the factors that also make it great, but they get something of the most important core that is in the music, and you can see an immediate emotional reaction to a lot of Western music, and of course with understanding then that deepens a lot the experience. But there is already something that just vibrates in us as human beings, no matter to matter what style of music we are listening to, and that's a very rewarding experience to see that alive in this work.
Yeah, well, and I think many in this part of the world are stunned if they first encounter Indian raga or African.
Exactly.
I mean, they don't understand it at all. They don't understand what might make it great, but they love it, and
exactly.
they don't quite know why.
That's the effect, yeah.
Well, we should take at least a minute or two to talk about the piece that you're playing, the Emperor Concerto. And you clearly, by virtue of attending the school that you went to early on, you clearly were really serious about the piano very early on. Mm-hmm. And I wonder when your sort of first encounter with the Emperor Concerto was, I imagine through a recording or a performance, whether you remember that at all.
Yeah. I think that must have been Wilhelm Kempf's recording. Okay. I'm almost sure about that, that we had on an old vinyl record of my father's little LP collection. And it was one of these things that just appealed to you right away as a kid. It's one of these pieces, that's why it is so famous, that you just cannot be indifferent to, even if you don't know so much classical music yet, and has definitely added to that very early wish of mine to become a professional musician. So I remember this quite vividly. And sometimes it's difficult to get rid of your old impressions because they are so strongly... this memory is still so strong of how you got to know a certain piece that it might be difficult to get rid of it if you want to find your own interpretation. But I've also now played this piece quite a bit, not as many as some of the other Beethoven concertos, but very regularly over the past 8 years, I would say. And it's slowly becoming more and more my own, I feel, because especially with pieces that you've heard dozens of times from your childhood on, it can be tricky and you have to very consciously try to make a tabula rasa kind of situation with the score, with the music, and really find what the music is telling you personally and how it's growing from your own stylistic and pianistic background. And that's a lifelong process, which is great.
And is this the first time you've done it with Maestro Dohnányi?
It is, yes.
Yeah. So I'm talking to you just after you've rehearsed it for the first time. What do you sense that he is bringing to this that might add to this finding your voice in it?
Yes, it is this fascinating feeling that I always have when the two of us work together, that this background... he doesn't need to force things from this background that he has. Things come out so naturally in such a, again, holistic way with his grand personality and still having been close to people who know some of the 19th century, knew at the time, some of the 19th century composers. So he has had encounters and talks with people who had talked to Brahms, yeah. So there's such generous and natural attitude towards this language that just intuitively teaches you a lot as a listener, and of course even more as somebody who's blessed to play along.
To play along, yes. when you arrive at this is your first concert at Symphony Hall.
Yes, exactly.
So when you arrive at a place you'd never been, how long does it generally take you to feel comfortable in a hall? And is there anything, if you have a chance to play alone in the hall, mm-hmm. is there any particular music that you always go to just see what's going on in a hall?
Not particularly. It is always a magical moment to have a hall, and especially a hall like the legendary hall like this, for yourself. So I didn't have that yet, but I'll have that tomorrow before the concert. Little time to practice and try to feel the acoustics and the instrument, how it feels on stage. That is always always a magical moment. Just as much as an empty hall after a concert with all the vibrations that still linger. And of course, in that case, it's an awesome moment to arrive in a hall that you've read so much about, seen so many pictures of, heard many recordings that were made here. And then also to see the old shape of the old Leipzig Gewandhaus is very interesting for me. As I vaguely mentioned before, Saxony feels like second home area, next to Berlin, and Leipzig is a very important place for me too. So there's even more with that old connection. So it's very special to arrive here.
That's interesting to me because you were born and grew up well after the old Gewandhaus was gone, yet so it sounds like maybe as you were growing up that the sort of spiritual presence of that old building remained in Leipzig. Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. This is probably, I don't know, the orchestra where I feel that the heritage and the whole tradition is kept alive, both in a natural way, it's just there, and also actively with a lot of care and attention.
The Gewandhaus Orchestra.
The Gewandhaus Orchestra and the whole... although the building, the old building, I think there were three, I think it's already the
third
building,
exactly.
Right. Even though the old ones aren't there anymore, but still the spirit of the probably old buildings, one could fairly say, and of the Kapellmeister who they had, and the tradition going back to Mendelssohn, is you can just grab it with your hands, you feel, yeah? But you don't have the building anymore, and there is something missing, so that's why it was particularly fascinating and emotional to see how this hall looked, at least about, and to imagine how that would have been in old Leipzig. It's fascinating, and now with this new connection with the two orchestras, with another one of my great friends, Andres Nelsons, is something extremely inspiring and exciting, I feel.
I am thrilled about it myself, and there was I've been to Leipzig, so I've seen the new Gewandhaus, but the orchestra, the Gewandhaus Orchestra, has played here a few times.
Yeah.
One of their visits a few years ago, I remember stepping out into the hallway during intermission, and one of the management of the Gewandhaus, whom I had met before, came running up to me. They were absolutely supercharged with the presence of this hall. It was as though it spoke to them in some way.
Yeah. I can only imagine. And building is important. Yeah, I mean, you don't need it, as Leipzig teaches us, to keep a tradition alive. But buildings do talk a lot, and just by seeing this, there is something that you learn about old Leipzig and what it will have been like and sounded like at the time that otherwise you wouldn't have. So it's a fantastic thing.
Martin Helmchen, it's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much, and thank you for the time today.
My pleasure. It was great talking to you. Thank you.